Season 7, Episode 2, Workplace Incentives to Combat the Return to Work Office Ball and Chain Working from Home. It's a battleground. The Why Work team dives into workplace incentive planning, from Botox booths to four-day work week. Join Alan, Trage and Sarah as they explore incentives, risks, mediocrity versus innovation, and the psychology of designing joy into work. This is a very topical, unresolved issue. Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. This is a public service announcement. Sarah has something funny to say about this.
Talking about dropping her in it.
What?
Oh, come on, Sarah.
All right,
Sarah.
So guys, we've heard a lot in the media, at least. We've heard a lot about these mandates to return to the office, right? Must return to a physical structure office. At least that's what we're talking about, seeing a lot of media about this. And we've heard New South Wales government has made this type of announcement for government workers. Recently in papers, in the news media, was information about the Flight Centre. And Dell, I believe, has just asked their employees to return to the office. And here's what's funny. This was our friend Gus, who is contributing to the book that we're writing,
okay.
Trage, Transformative Work Design for Sustainable Futures. Dear Professor Gus, he's brilliant. He was telling me about what he had heard was some incentives. He heard a presentation where incentives were offered by an organization. The organization thought that they were right clever about this to get people to return to the office and really want to be there. The incentive was free Botox booths.
What's a Botox boot?
Where's that outside?
What's it?
What? That's liquid gold.
Free Botox.
Well, we're about, but
what's that,
probably
boots?
New South Wales.
Shoes.
No, Botox.
Botox
the toxin.
Injections.
But what's the boot?
Anti-wrinkle.
Booth.
Booth. Oh, booth.
Like kissing booths, but
you know,
the Botox booth.
Right. Okay,
like
well,
a tanning
maybe kissing
booth.
Afterwards.
Yes.
Like a tanning booth.
Okay.
This
so
is a free Botox
fantastic.
Booth.
Fantastic. Are we talking about cosmetic or hyperhidrosis for your armpits?
I'm
or
assuming.
What are we talking
I'm
about?
Just assuming facial cosmetic.
I want
right.
to sign up because Botox isn't cheap.
So hold on a second. Is Trage the only person who's had Botox? I'll declare up front that I have not.
I have
Alan,
not. I will declare clearly I have not had Botox.
Alan, I don't see a lot of wrinkles on your forehead.
Genetics?
There's not a lot on yours either. And we know what? You have had Botox.
Hang on, my forehead's not moving.
Okay, so you
where are you?
Look, just for the record, I have had Botox, but not in
well,
not on my face.
Well, you know, that is interesting.
Okay, that's a whole other question.
Yeah, Alan didn't hear that.
No, he didn't.
But I have used Botox.
This is Dr. Agustin Chavez, he's a workplace provocateur. You'll like
Ooh,
this.
I like
You'll
that.
Like that.
A workplace provocateur.
He's an architect. He's a contributing.
Love it.
It's great, right? You would love this guy.
Is he with us? Is he in our book?
He's in our book.
Love
That's
it.
Right.
Love
yep.
It.
He's contributing to the book, and he's got all these signposts, and he really challenges cool. how workplaces think about innovation or how they don't.
Yeah, yeah, I love
That's
it.
Another thing we've got to talk about is workplace innovation and mediocrity. But in the meantime, for right now,
yeah, right now.
The issue is about returning to the office. So Agustin laughs about this. So his background is in architecture, and we've come at it from different mediums, but he also agrees that, hang on, even if you have a pretty structure, it doesn't mean that work practices are sound, that there's good occupational management. And you, in fact, it almost can be deceptive that everything looks shiny and polished, but in fact, people are really disturbed. And on the other hand, you might have something that initially looks low socioeconomic, but there's a lot of love in that workplace, right? So he's always concerned about the aesthetics of work versus the real delivery, the mechanics of work, and the machine behind it. So I love that he's come about it from that perspective. And, you know, equally, I'm coming about it through just that pure human factors and that health orientation. But we're getting to the same place with similar perspectives.
So he's saying all that glitters ain't gold.
So some of his glitter places are saying, hey, we've resolved this. We have a good strategy. We're going to give Botox booths for our employees.
or ice hockey machines.
Well, you think it would be Southern California or something.
Or bean bags.
Let's just look a bit at the history. So we had the COVID pandemic, and then in a very rushed way, employers sent all their workers home to work from home. And
without a lot of support, without a lot of technology, emotional leadership guidance, just like school kids. Not a lot of
assessment. It just was just a lot basically of school go
kids,
home.
Not a lot of assessment, like school kids.
Yeah. And they were able to attribute that to the government directing them to send workers home.
Right.
So they didn't really need to think it through. Now we're in this position. Then we went through a phase where people were seeing the benefits from work from home, and they seemed to be quite strong, although there were some serious safety concerns.
And there were additional mental health issues. So there's debate. So for some people, it works incredibly well. Yeah. There's also other benefits, like environmental benefits of not being on the road all the time, you know, and congestion and time. And there's pros, and there's also cons.
Also, the amount of dogs are adopted, now they're being returned.
Yes, there's issues like that.
There were workplace isolation issues, but some people, so there are pros and cons, but a customized strategy is what we're talking about.
And what you're saying is now we're seeing in the media that employers, particularly big employers, want their workers to come back into the office.
And the issue is this blanket mandate without a lot of thought of the nuances. I guess that's more the concern. Just blanket like mandate.
Just let the mandate go home, you Alan, must go as you home. Said.
Now, was confronting, back. And now come back because we said so.
And there's because some, there's we some said so. Very real practical issues about that. So workers who've upsticked and moved to a more idyllic location.
Because they were told that's the policy, and they moved regionally. Are you kidding me? They've sold their homes. Families have relocated.
Yes.
Correct.
You're right.
Now, the thing my employment law colleagues would say that the real risk here is that employers are not getting advice before they make this transition to returning workers to the office. And what can be enormously problematic is if there's no strategic approach, and then you have a worker who doesn't want to come back into the office and starts claiming that they're injured and starts stitching it up together with an injury came, or they've got a disability and they can't come back into work.
Bingo, seeing that too.
Yeah,
bingo.
And then once you try to, you can't make a change on a worker level. You've got to do it on the whole workforce level. You've got to, you have to have a well thought out strategy which you implement for the whole workforce, not for that one worker that's causing you anxiety.
Because that sets precedent, for the whole workforce. If it gets tested
you don't
again.
Want to get caught in a chain effect where you go from one worker to the next worker to the next worker and uncontrollably creating precedent.
Yeah, but let's ask for a more existential question. Why do you think employers want them back? Because there are enough studies to show that productivity was good or consistent, at least in some areas improved. Why?
I mean, there's also studies that 4-day work weeks are getting better health outcomes and productivity. Medibank in Victoria. Yes.
We know why lessee agents, we know why property agents want it, why cafe owners want people to come back to the city. But why does the employer want you to come back?
So let's just pause on that. Say that again.
Well, we know that those people involved in property leasing,
they want occupancy, right? There's a lot of fear around lack of occupancy.
Yeah, cafes and restaurants, obviously.
Yeah, because you want business traffic. You need customers. There's no foot traffic in the inner city.
Yeah, so retail sector, I get all that.
Yep.
But why does that employer intrinsically want Alan, you back at that office, chained to your desk,
I don't know the answer to that question. Why? I'd love to know whether it's based on objective beliefs or whether it's based on subjective
beliefs. And sense of control.
Whether that is a factor too, whether those in charge feel that they don't have the level of control that they need to have.
One thing that comes up a lot when I speak to some managers, particularly if it's like property management, facility management, they might not have some of the background of occupational health, workplace health and safety, or industrial law, is the perception that, well, we're giving our employees some choice. There are some mandates. We're only doing partial mandates, right? Partial days, some factors around it. But the choice, when they choose to work at home, if they choose, we're not responsible. And I go, I think you might have to revisit that. Yeah, hang on a minute.
But it's a good reason for, at least if you've got them under your watchful eye, at least you can mitigate that stress, that anxiety.
A perception that you're mitigating it. But in all of the cases we've talked about, you still have an obligation wherever that person's working.
No. I meant by bringing people back in, at least you can not stress about what is that person going for a walk now? Are they being stung by bees? They're in the office.
Yeah.
So if that lampshade falls on you, it's in the office.
Do they have a fire blanket if there's a fire at home? So, do they, fire extinguisher?
That's a good reason to bring someone back, because it's like if you're going to mind a child, you're going to keep an eye on them, or if you're going to nip out to the shops, you're not really minding that child.
I remember we had that case where we talked about the dogs fighting at the front.
So you're not going to have a dog fight.
You won't have that, but it's not like we didn't have workplace injuries before when you were in the office, right? It's like, but hang on.
Back to your control, it's like, at least if it happened on my watch. I saw it happen.
I agree that that's likely a motivator, a strong motivator. Feeling like, I can speak to you if I know you're right here. I can see what you're doing, you know.
Well, I think there is that aspect of you can. It's much easier to control the environment if the workers are in a business premises.
Correct.
Because you can do things like you can have all the electrics checked. You know that it's going to be a structurally sound building. But then that's offset by the cost of leasing the premises.
There's a cost, that's right.
Yeah, because initially, as you said, that first wave, we saw property managers of organizations, not of the buildings, but facilities, people going, "Hoo-hoo, less real estate footprint. Yeah, baby. And we get to lower our cost, our expenditure, right?"
So maybe that's not the reason.
So that's not the reason. Obviously, that's not enough of a reason.
It can't even be as simple as, "Hey, Alan, do you have a minute?" When you could just get on the phone and say, "Hey, Alan, let's do a Teams." So it's not, "I need you near close to me so I can have a chat with you." That could be a reason, but we know it's not really in today's telecommunication universe.
Maybe, and this is just me guessing, but maybe it's difficult to identify performance indicators when people are at home. So measuring the level of performance might be difficult.
What do you say about that, Sarah?
Absolutely. I think that the muddiness in this issue is that decision makers will use a reason for their decision to mask perhaps what's happening beneath the surface. If we go back to real primal needs of feeling like a manager needs to feel in control, if they have some status, maybe, right?
Manager must manage.
And it's right. Or the technologies haven't been sufficient, right, to support this. But I'm thinking it goes back to really human, very raw, natural kinds of motivators. But the actual excuse or what even we, it'll take a while to dissect this through the research, right? It'll take a little while to dissect what those reasons are in a fair and balanced way, because it's easy to say, well, we just want to make sure we have more collaboration, or we feel productivity is not the same without this. We can't imbue our culture, our brand, and our vision, right? You can say all kinds of corporate speak around it is what I'm getting at, but what's really beneath the surface? And most of the time when you need someone you need to see what everyone's doing, there is a control issue. That's why I raised that, right?
I'm putting money on the control.
But there's lawyers who will advise that, you know, hang on, it's too hard to regulate everything that happens everywhere else in the world. But we had...
Well, if you do make that decision that you want to bring the workforce back, then it's a very good time to go and see an employment lawyer. And just for the record, I'm not an employment lawyer. But
you're not spruiking work to yourself.
I'm not spruiking myself, but it's a very good time to go and see an employment lawyer and develop a strategy and plan.
I would say a combination. It's a legal advice proactively, preemptively, is not just wait for a problem, right? We've talked about that before, that value of the lawyer in work design, but also really constructive job design. Like, have they actually dissected what tasks people must do, why they assign that, are they the right tasks, are they strategically aligned, do they need to happen in the office, can they happen remote, you know, really dissect the also the emotions around that, the value people place, this is fun, this is energizing to me, or this is demoralizing, this causes me stress, this task I feel I need mentoring and support. And until you've sort of done that and you've got these agile analytics around it, it's very hard to have a strong argument about, hang on, which tasks I think you need to be in the office for. Let's actually do the study. And we talked about the Software Solutions Beamable, that helps you analyze that and look at what's efficient, what can drop away. Very, very important. Must this task actually be done with other people, and do they need the resources of the office? I mean, how much of that? And you can add time to that, because we can say, Trej, in your role, I'm making this up, 33% of your tasks actually really should be in the workplace. And then you have a strength, an actual position on this. But right now it seems very emotional. Decisions are being made emotional, which can escalate conflict.
Yeah, you gave the example of the Botox booth, very interesting.
It's very interesting.
You'd want to be careful that is not seen as a deal, as a contract with the worker.
Yes.
Because the worker might simply say, I don't want Botox. Mm. I'll stay at home, thanks.
What's the value of that? Right.
Yeah.
So there's an assumed perceived value is what I was, there was well, that well, joke if, that we're making
if,
about
it
this.
It might just be, if you presented it as, we recognize that it's disruptive to change your workflow and we want to do something nice for you, so we're doing this nice thing. I think that's okay. Of course, so long as you've got the risks covered. But if you're presenting it as this is a trade-off, we're bringing you back to the office, so we're giving you the Botox, that seems to me to be a bit risky.
Yeah.
Very easy for a worker to say, "Oh no, thanks."
So you can be thinking about collaboration, innovation, but the same Dr. Gus Chavez talks a lot about, he was surprised in some of his research to realize that a lot of innovation happens when you get time to work alone. So you might have collaboration to start bouncing ideas, but to actually really create, the creative part is done with solo work. And he's like, wow, okay, so this is really at loggerheads of some of the trends to make everybody go back and work with everyone. You might say we need regulation and control. We want brand culture. We feel like it can only be imbued if we work together. Or it might be about a customer experience, right? Because there are some workplaces like healthcare, for example, where it's quite hard in many instances to do anything other than in the coalface, face-to-face, client, direct consumer service. So then there's the imbalance of, hang on, if I'm a teacher, for example, why am I made to be at school all the time, but the office gets to stay home? So maybe it's about organizational justice and perceived optics around this, right?
I think there's a bit
there's
of that.
So many different reasons and different contexts. But if you haven't done that analysis of tasks, time allocations, strategic alignment and people's values of their work and what they perceive that to be, you don't have a strong decision-making platform.
No, and you
at scale.
And you need to make provision for exceptions. So you need to have, it might be a hardship concept where if the transitioning the worker back into the office is going to cause a great deal of hardship, then there's some wriggle room there to accommodate.
Just like you should have done before you made everyone go home and you didn't even know what their home situation was like, whether they were exposed to domestic violence, where they had a solo workstation available to use. Equally, there was not a lot of consultation and engagement and participatory review on this. And so the human factors professional, combined with your lawyer, very, very significant assets here on this kind of workforce strategy.
But I think, I agree, looking at the media, there definitely seems to be a trend for employers wanting workers to come back into the office.
I'm doing some chats with Next Generation at UQ, Dr. Remy Ayoka, or Professor Remy Ayoka, and I'll be keen to chat with her to see if she's doing some research on this. There's a lot of centers doing research on return to work and changes away from work, back to work, distributed workforce models. There's a lot out there, but I'm just really keen to say what's happening with this trend of making everyone come back without, again, the issue is more about not thinking, right? That's right. The decisions you're making made, are they well-informed? Are you using any multi-criterion decision-making? Is it transparent?
Yes. A lot of what the law is about is fairness.
Yeah.
And so is it fair?
Is it fair?
Well, the thing is, you've had a blip, really. You've had 3 or 4 years of, you know, workers getting used to
working
from home. Compare that against, really, in the modern advanced capitalist setting, 100 years of workers being in the office. So this is a hard, particularly for managers, to accept. It's like, well, hang on, we've been controlling, so the word that you've used, we've been controlling this process for several decades, and a pandemic turned this on its head. We want to now resume that control. So for me, I see it as a political, ideological reason.
Of course you do, Trish.
and because ultimately it's a bit like this. It is, and it can boil down to from, well, hang on, what am I paying you for? Yeah. I want to see it. Yes, but I'll just show you the report. By it, I mean, I want to see you. I want to see you in a
suit. The mechanics, like the factory worker moving through the motions.
I don't want to see you in pajamas and slippers.
Yeah.
So what about in the academic world? Is there any trend in the academic world?
Oh, no, they've got, like, you know, obviously when you're teaching commitments, but it's pretty much some universities do 2 days work from home, 2 days in the office, you know, 1 day like meetings and so on. No, they've implemented these
measures.
And Sarah, I know in the past you've said, on what basis, how did you magically conjure up this 2 day? But my point is, some offices do that. You've got your 4 days full on full pay with Medibank. But I think ultimately it is a question of control. The worker has the power, the labour puts it in, but those who are paying you for your labour power, getting into Marxian's concepts now, they want to see it. They want to visualise the bang for buck.
I've heard of one client who does what they call a 3-2-1, which means 3 days. Do you know what it is?
No, but
I can't tell you what it is.
I can see.
Yeah. All right.
No, three, I mean, yeah.
Okay, so 3-2-1.
3-2-1.
3 days wherever you want. 2 days in the office, and at least one of those days needs to cross over with your teammates or your leadership. So they've got this flex with some boundaries.
Flex with boundaries, right?
Okay.
3-2-1.
Now, the other colleague of mine, Dart Lindsley, who is with the Design for Humans, his podcast. I've spoken on his podcast.
Yes.
And Design Work for Humans. He is also an exec at Google. Now, he speaks about the analogy of this mandate for return to the office and the shift from pandemic and back and forth is more like ocean waves, meaning it seems like it goes extreme one direction, then the extreme. But in fact, he reckons it has to happen in a socio-political force with waves where it's progressively going to get back up on the shore where workplaces will have more flexibility, but it expands and contracts. It's a bit like an organization that goes, we are centralized. No, we're devolved, and we have devolved decision-making. Now we're back to centralized. Now we're back to devolved. Universities do that all the time, restructure.
That's the thing about the three. Yeah, the 2 days on, show up.
So I like that analogy that Dart gives us, because it's like, okay, it'll feel like everybody's away. Now everybody must go back. But in fact, it's just happening in graduated ways where it become eventually a more accepted norm to be able to have more workplace flexibility.
An ebb and flow.
The ebb and flow. But part of it also makes me think about this issue about mediocrity, right?
Yes, because you're really hung up on that.
I am right now because I'm seeing it so much. I think there's when economies are tight, when restructures are happening, when there's a little bit of fear factor in the workplace, which seems like is happening, is quite rampant. I'm hearing it from other colleagues around the world, not just the country, and not only Western world. I'm hearing it even in African continent. You know, it's like, wait a minute. When the world is very uncertain, socio-political unrest, financial disturbances, people go back to a lot of risk aversion, right? And so I often think, well, hang on, why do you call in specialist and you have all of this lip service, corporate streak literature about we want to be transformative, we want to be innovative, we want to be the good old 1980s and late 80s, early 90s, the employer of choice kind of, you know, language in all of your literature. And we expect to have a good workplace culture, but then they don't actually want to make a measurable change. They actually, so I'm finding myself now in reports writing very plainly, a little bit of intervention is akin to no intervention at all, because it's not felt to the people, from the people, or by the people on the ground. It's, you if you really want to make a difference in any of your measures, do something remarkable. Right?
Make a splash.
Make a splash.
So you're saying basically the current vibe is like no waves. So rather than
no waves, don't make a wave.
Don't make a wave.
Don't. So there's risk aversion. There's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape, and it just becomes too difficult to sponsor this.
Yes.
It's why I think, you know, those advisory councils are so important, because you can give advice where businesses can at least control the cadence, the pace of what they're seeking, because right now to make a big change can be really scary for people. There's a lot,
right,
a lack of leadership vision.
Yeah, I think there's a vibe at the moment where things
fear
are like,
of change.
Like, yeah, just keep things calm.
And calm
quiet.
The farm. Is that what you're, that's what you're
yes,
saying, isn't it?
Calm the
there's
farm.
There's a talent just, drain. There's a, you know, skills and capabilities shortages, right? Talent shortages. So people just don't upset waves. Too nervous about how to do this. There's a lot of inertia in those processes. So that, you know, because that's all I'm seeing in the discussions I'm having with some incredibly intellectual, smart, creative people is like, hang on, why though are organizations always drifting back into this little space of mediocrity?
Maybe they've got innovation fatigue.
Innovation fatigue.
Maybe. Just
I'm craving those alpha clients that are innovative.
Like I should
those
be
are
point scoring here. You know,
yeah. Innovation fatigue.
Those are so fun when you find that alpha client who's really prepared to
yes.
innovate, and they don't expect that change to be overnight. They know how to graduate, how to have iterative and vision, and then expect and see that. A plan for 5 to 10 years, and they're more visionary.
Oh,
that is
I
so
think,
fun.
I think you've tapped onto something. 5 to 10 years, perhaps given the current state of, or certainly around the
you,
world.
You can't with, say that.
What?
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 Given the current state?
No, I think you've tapped on something.
Tapped on what? Wait, let me finish.
Can you not really?
Yeah,
oh, come on.
Given the current internet, the current world climate and the feelings of...
yes.
And I think this is post-COVID. There is a sense of anxiety. I'm wondering whether people don't want to plan at this stage the 5, the 10, the end vision.
So scary, right?
I'm wondering.
I mean, we talked about that with school systems changing, and I asked, what if we had this great opportunity to completely change the way education was delivered? But everything just happens so fast, and we just were too scared to make a real change, right? So everybody went back to schools 5 days a week, the way it always was. Mind
you,
that's
a good example.
There's a Catholic school in Victoria that has just a principal that instituted a 4-day-a-week school term, school week.
Wow, students would be happy with that.
So teachers might too. I think he's still working out some bugs, but that was advertised in the media.
Maybe there is no appetite for that. Bigger, longer term at this point, at this juncture in the world, like certainly
I'm ready to work. If anyone's listening who is part of that transformative, innovative mindset, I'm ready to work with you. Call me.
Yep. Anyone who is not suffering from...
I don't mind soliciting real plainly. That is so much fun to work with.
Yeah. Anyone who's not suffering from innovation fatigue,
and if
call
you,
Sarah.
If you're in between, go for those advisory councils, right? If you feel like you just need to learn how, you don't know how to write your design brief yet, let's go.
Yeah. That's cool.
Sex, adoration, intoxication. Sex, adoration, intoxication.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan. And if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe, and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases, and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.